Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 20. Very Bad Things. So can we see a list of the requests, or whatever the bad things are? Jenny asked. Yeah, Nick was typing as he spoke. He pulled up a list of all the available communication channels on the low-core request server and started to open each one to see what was inside. Or at least, we can see some of them. Looks like they're cautious about noobs. I can see that there are requests. I just can't see the details for all of them. Can't you ask someone? Jenny came round to look at the screen. James had already shuffled his chair over. Cece even scampered over, realised it was all just a load of boring text, then headed back to Elf, who was cradling her wine glass with both hands. Might not be a good idea to rely on chatting with other users in here, but there's some useful commands in the settings, and there's a set of rules on another channel. Hang on. He opened another client and brought up the rules channel side by side with one of the request channels. None of the other active users were currently sending messages, at least not on the channels Nick could access. What's everyone doing? James asked. Doesn't seem like much is going on. I bet no one chats much in here, Nick said. It's the same as with the Proxy Hunter group. It's best not to attract any undue attention. Let me check something. He opened another program, a utility app for tracking analytics data. Oh yeah, people have noticed me. Look at this. He pointed at the top few rows of tracking data. Web stats, James asked. Kinda. I monitor any visits to my profile page on the Zed forum. It pays to know who's looking at you. These hits came in the last few seconds. Who's looking? Jenny asked. Can't tell. It's all anonymous. And even if it wasn't, these would all have come through a bunch of proxies and VPNs. There's no way I can find out who or even where the actual user is. Not even the government can do that. But I bet it's people from LCRS checking me out. James sat back in his chair. Okay, so we're into the Alchemist servers and people are noticing. I guess we need to search through the requests, find one we can do, and hope that it's something that we can use to attract the attention of the Alchemist. What are the options? Assassinate the President of France? Blow up the moon? I like the moon, Elf said. Those aren't real ones. Let me make sure we understand the process before we agree to anything. Nick expanded the rules channel and started reading through a list of about 20 rules. This says you can stop anyone else from accepting a request for up to 48 hours by using the /hold command. To accept, you've got to hold it first, then assign it to yourself. It also says that if you accept two requests and fail to fulfill them, you get kicked out of the server. James was leaning in close and had read further than Nick. Nick kept reading carefully. He didn't want to miss something that would be useful. What about the fact that you can get kicked if you mention cheese? Jenny said. That's in Rule 17. You think it's a joke? No, Nick shook his head. LCRS is the Alchemist server, so we play by his rules, whatever they are. If we accept and complete a request, we get a number of TP, which are tier points. Oh, here's a leaderboard on another channel. He typed in the command to join the leaderboard channel. Just shows the top 10 users. Top one's the Alchemist, no surprise there. There's no tier points listed, just the level. Alchemist's level 99, and 10th place, someone called LLA, is level 21. He scanned through the rest of the names. Know anyone in the top 10? Jenny asked. Nick shook his head again. What about the guy in fourth? James said. Octobladder. Sounds like a fun guy. Octoblade, Jenny corrected. And let's not be assuming they're all male. Plenty of evil female hackers out there. Do they list pronouns? James asked. No, Nick said. Everything's as anonymous as possible. Apart from the Nicks, there's no other data recorded. Everyone's anonymous apart from you, Elf asked. And other Nicks? I mean the usernames. They're called Nicks, short for nickname. My Nick is SLNT_HWK. So not my name at all. He switched back to the channel with the list of requests and typed a quick command to reorder it. These are the current lowest tier jobs that we can accept. Better make a good choice if we've only got two goes at it, James said. Three of them read silently for a few minutes while Elf sipped her wine and rubbed Cece between the shoulders. James let out a long breath and slowly shook his head. And this is the lowest tier possible. I did say the alchemist was a bad person, and that this wasn't likely to work, Nick said. I'm not going to kidnap any children, Jenny said, even if their parents are billionaires. I can see why someone traded with you. This is not going to be easy. The second one down look possible? James asked, taking down a bank's global payment systems for an hour. I couldn't do it from here, Nick said. That's real hacking. The sort of thing that would need a massive botnet for a denial of service attack. A large cyber gang might be able to do it. But maybe we could do it without much hacking if we could physically get into the bank somehow. If we get rid of everything that involves direct harm to other people, what's left? Jenny didn't sound optimistic. Just three, James said. He held out his thumb. We've got the bank one. He held out a finger. Another one that involves supplying three Norwegian passports to an address in Albania. He held out another finger. And one to falsify papers for a boat to land in an Italian harbour. That last one might be okay. Not if it involves dangerous migrant sea crossings, Jenny said. We're not going to get involved with that. Landing a boat into Italy could definitely be for trafficking. Okay. James put his last finger back. So we've got two. One to steal passports and one to take down a bank. It sounded like he was listing options for which film they should watch. Which one shall we try first? They didn't try anything at all on Friday night. They just talked through the different ways that they might go about stealing passports, while Nick did some research on the bank's systems until it was time for bed. On Saturday, there was a plan to travel to London and investigate the auction. Elf got up early to talk to Claudia and arrange things.
Claudia says that we can meet up with Zen and Bobby in Hyde Park, she told the others over breakfast. Do we have a portal symbol for anywhere nearby?
I think so, James said. I found most of the London symbols in a notebook last week. We should go by train, Jenny said. It's only an hour away, and there's no point risking a daylight portal. Not in London, where everywhere's always busy. Nick had been contemplating going with them, but the mention of the rats swayed him towards staying in Brighton. I want to keep researching the bank, he said, and to make sure we know exactly what the rules are around accepting a request. Once the others had left, Nick turned his attention back to the LCRS and reread the rules. Then he did a thorough search through all of the channels, making notes in a text file as he went. While it was true that all the users were anonymous, he copied each nick in case they used the same one on other servers and forums. He also made some notes about the LCRS's underlying system, but did not even attempt a scan of it nor any other hacking reconnaissance, as it was totally prohibited by rule number one. Anyone caught hacking LCRS will be banned immediately. Throughout the day, Nick spent his time between getting his head around the LCRS forum itself and finding more about the bank that the alchemist wanted to be taken offline. The bank itself, Tragensen Group, was a small Swiss-based business with an address in Geneva. During his training to be a portal master, James said he'd made portals to a lot of different countries, mostly in Europe. Nick had half a notion to look through James's notebooks to see if he'd catalogued any in Switzerland, but got sidetracked as he remembered about his failed attempt to translate a portal using his phone the previous week. Something about his phone was nagging at him, so he dug it out of his pocket and pulled up the picture he'd taken with the translation app. Looking at it full size in the gallery, he noticed that on one side of the picture, some of the symbol's lines were blurred. The caretaker had been right. Pond water had got into the camera's lens. Turning the phone around, he could see a few tiny drops of condensation trapped under the clear plastic. It had been over a week since the phone got soaked, so he tried again, flipping open the nearest notebook and taking a picture of a random symbol. This time, the image on the phone screen was much clearer. Almost no blurring at all, apart from the tip of a line that descended all the way into the bottom right corner.
The gift of Barb. That was how Andy, the guy in Twitchell's laundry, had put it after she fixed his Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi that Nick's laptop had not been able to detect. He had been too cold and distracted to think about it at the time, but now it seemed like he'd overlooked something important. Either Andy had made up the comment about the Wi-Fi and it didn't exist, or it did exist. After a few minutes of searching online, Nick had learned some useful information. Firstly, his laptop's Wi-Fi chip was about as good as you could get. He'd assumed it was, given how new and expensive the laptop was, but he'd never checked the specs. Secondly, while most modern wireless networks used 2.4 GHz and 5 GHz bands to send data, there was another frequency, 6 GHz, that was not yet widely used, but some organizations were already taking advantage of it for higher wireless transfer speeds. Nick's knowledge of hardware wasn't great, and he struggled through a bunch of technical explanations for a few minutes before he found something useful. An article said he could update the firmware of his laptop to enable it to use the new 6 GHz frequency. He doubted that Twitchell's network needed the faster speeds, but there was no harm in running the update and taking a look. He queued a download of the newest firmware from his laptop's manufacturer, then went back to finding out more about the Swiss bank's network. Rabbit holes, partial scans, protocol and version checking. Nick was multitasking while running an array of virtual machines in parallel, all aimed at Trygonson Group's publicly available systems. Even though he hadn't achieved anything other than gathering some data, time managed to pass by without him noticing. The autumn sun was now sinking low, melting into a gap between a block of flats and the trees in the bottom of the garden, and, rather annoyingly, glaring off the top of the laptop's screen. Nick shuffled in his chair to block the orange light with his head, but couldn't quite cover both edges at the same time. He sighed, stretched, and stood up, and turned to the trifold doors. There weren't any curtains or blinds, just a floor-to-ceiling view of the garden. The best option would be to reposition his laptop to the gloomiest end of the table, or at least that's what he was thinking about, when a dark shape, a shadow-black rectangle, sprang into existence halfway up the tall evergreen trees. Not the best, Nick found himself critiquing the portal. A little high and an odd angle, too. At that moment, all of the gang barreled through it as if they'd been hurled by a trebuchet. James was first, clutching the key to the air in one hand and Elf in the other. Jenny was right behind, arms around the other two, urging them forward. They were flying at the wrong angle, straight toward the roof. Jenny must have realized as she let go of the others, started to fall, then grabbed wildly and snagged James's leg, pulling them all downward into the long grass in the middle of the garden. Nick was already out of the door and on the decking at the top of the stairs when Jenny rolled to her feet and turned back toward the portal, which, despite them all being in the garden, was still open. "Catch this!" Elf shouted, throwing something that might have been a half-eaten apple to Nick before helping James up. When Nick caught the object with both hands, he found it wasn't a half-eaten apple. It was half of a big, uncooked potato. And Elf wasn't exactly helping James up, more like she was dragging the floating boy up through the garden. "Just keep it open a bit longer," Elf said to James. "They'll be through in a moment." "What happened in London?" Nick began to ask, but didn't finish, as more creatures shot out of the portal. Two huge rats came first. They didn't float, just dropped heavily onto the grass. They were followed by half a dozen huge black birds. Crows, Nick thought. No, bigger than crows, ravens maybe. Straight after the birds, two more rats jumped through. One of them shouted, "Geronimo!" Nick recognized the voice. It was Bobby. Zen was with him. Which meant the first two rats were... "Get back," Jenny shouted, kicking at something in the long grass and missing. A rat sprang up, but didn't attack her. It simply scurried past and overtook Elf and James. While it ran, the birds spread outwards, and three peeled off and flew at Zen and Bobby, harassing the mercenaries with beak and talon. The other three ravens tightened into a triangle formation, like a squadron of fighter planes fixed on a target. That target, Nick realized too late, was him. He ducked as the first bird dive-bombed him. One of its razor-sharp talons scratched his shoulder, slicing through the thin fabric of his t-shirt like it was tissue paper. A warm trickle of blood ran down his arm. "Get off!" he shouted as another bird swooped down at him. There was a sound from the decking in front of him. A terrible sound. The sound of ratty feet scurrying, hard claws scratching on the wood. Nick kept one arm over his face. The other arm cradled the potato. More talons scratched at him, tearing at the skin on his exposed forearm. He winced and crouched even lower.
"Give it up," the rat said sharply, "and I'll call them ravens off."
Nick shuffled toward the back door, but the other rat beat him to it.
"The stamp," it said with a raspy, spittle-laced voice. "Give it to me or I'll slit your throat."
He was cornered. The two rats were hideous creatures, their sneers revealing sharp brown teeth as long as toothpicks. Both were holding makeshift knives with vicious rusty blades. One of them hissed, its thick tail writhing on the decking before suddenly going stiff. Then the rat leapt at him, knife held high, ready to drive the crooked point into Nick's neck. Nick let out a terrified shriek, which, due to the fact his voice gave out, came out more like a squeak.
"Uh-uh,"
Zen said, his pike swinging fast and true, brushing the hairs on top of Nick's head before making contact with the rusty blade 2 feet in front of him, shattering it, then passing through the broken shards and catching the unfortunate rat full in the chest. Even then, the pike kept moving, ignoring the rules of physics, an unstoppable juggernaut, gathering the rat with it before flinging it off the decking and into a brown recycling bin in the garden below.
"Hole in one,"
Bobby said, shutting the lid of the bin and dragging it toward the steps. Jenny was next to him, holding her coat in her arms. It was writhing and fighting against her grip. She handled it up toward Bobby and the top of the bin.
"Just a tap in this,"
he said, opening the lid for Jenny, who shoved the coat into it.
"No need to lose a perfectly good coat,"
Bobby said, jumping in after it, making a few grunting noises while causing some rather sickening squawks. He sprang out holding the crumpled and now rather feather-covered coat. All of this was quite enough for the other three birds, who stopped flapping above Nick's head and made their getaway through the still open portal.
"Seems like we've had a little misunderstanding,"
the remaining attacker said, lowering its knife slowly.
"We might have been a little quick to judgment."
"I'll give you a choice," Zen said. "Hand-to-hand combat with me or my cousin. You can pick either of us."
Bobby gave the eager wave of someone who really wanted to be picked first.
"Or," Zen went on, "you can climb in with the others and we'll send you back to London."
The rat didn't say a word. It just sheathed the knife into its tatty belt and walked silently down the stairs and climbed into the recycle bin.
"Maybe another time,"
Bobby said hopefully before closing the lid on the defeated rat. A moment later, Jenny wheeled the bin down to the bottom of the garden and, like a Christmas Day strongman, heaved it backwards over her head and through the portal. Only then did James close the portal by pulling the silver nib from the quill. "Right," he said. "Let's hope that was worth fighting for."
"One thing's for sure," Zen said. "You lot seem to attract more trouble than us, and we're literally paid to get into fights."
He turned to Nick, who was frozen in place.
"Looks like you caught the worst of it. Might want to stop that bleeding."
The rat moved closer and peered up at Nick's arm and shoulder, which were covered with blood. His long nose twitched as he sniffed the wound.
"No poison in there, just good clean cuts."
Nick tried to breathe. It was hard when all of his muscles were intent on tightening at the same time. Part of his mind stayed in the realm of logic and reason. Compared to the two attackers, Zen and his cousin Bobby were practically catwalk models. Or ratwalk, Nick's mind managed to come up with. But Zen's face was so close, and its huge scaly pink tail so thick, and those claws so sharp. Nick tried to tell his legs to take a step backwards, and suddenly he found he couldn't tell which way gravity was pulling him. It was as if James had made him weightless with the key to the air. His eyes shut out the world, and his mind knew that he was definitely falling, in one direction or perhaps in another. He felt the potato, the hope it was worth fighting for, half potato, slip from his fingers. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.